Hello, and welcome to a CAPSID video podcast on speech therapy telepractice training. My name is Mark DeRuyter, and I'm the Vice President for Professional Development with the Council. Today, I have a great opportunity to talk with Dr. Judy Walker. Dr. Walker is an Associate Professor and Coordinator of the University of Maine Speech Therapy Telepractice Program. This program is a great thing for us to think about, as so many of our member programs have been pushed or thrust into telepractice with the pandemic. And maybe we haven't had the time we've wanted to really think through where we want to be with telepractice in a thoughtful and mindful way. Dr. Walker, you've got a program at your institution that has been going for quite some time. And so we'd love to talk about it. Good morning and welcome. And we'd love to hear about your mission and kind of how you moved through setting up this program and making it a great opportunity for student education. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Mark. I'm very happy to be here. My interest in telepractice started back around 2012 when I was the chair of the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at University of Maine. I was receiving phone calls from superintendents and rehab coordinators and others throughout the state asking us to produce more graduate students in speech therapy. We are the only program in the state of Maine that has graduate training in speech therapy. We were at capacity, and so it was very clear to me that we were not able to produce more students to meet the shortages that I was hearing about from all of these different inquiries. So I started thinking about a different way that we could be efficient and effective in reaching people with disabilities in our state. And I became very, very interested in telepractice at that point. Lo and behold, I learned that my colleagues at Waldo County General Hospital down in Belfast, Maine, who are truly pioneers in telepractice training, already were doing telepractice. And so I started working with them to learn more about this. And our training program actually then started at that point. So when we first started to conceptualize this program, it was clear that our primary focus was on workforce development. Although we couldn't increase the capacity of our graduate student numbers and enrollments, we could increase their effectiveness and their efficiency in reaching more people throughout the state. So workforce development and meeting the workforce shortages in Maine was our primary focus. Simultaneously, we realized that there were many schools and other facilities throughout the state and adults with disabilities who needed services and were not receiving services. So we realized it was sort of a win-win where we would be training our students and simultaneously providing services to those in need throughout the state. After a few years and the program had been developed, we then added a research component addressing how to use the technology to meet social isolation and communication needs in adults, as well as looking for and looking at the impact that telepractice could have in improving outcomes in our children in public schools. So hence, we had a tripart mission that was crucial and critical to moving forward the telepractice program that was pretty well thought out and carefully and incrementally built within our department.
Yeah, this is really interesting to hear, Judy, because the thinking through your process, you know, and hearing that word years, right, that you had years to work through exactly what you wanted this to be and how it met the need is something that I hope our member programs with how things have changed and how we're now looking ahead, we'll be able to reflect back and really think about telepractice in a meaningful way instead of just a response, right? A response to the pandemic where we've had to work so quickly. I really appreciate that. I can imagine that the way you conceptualize the training and things then was really thoughtful and planful. Do you have more to tell us about that?
Right. So after starts and stops in trial and error, we ultimately decided that the best model for learning is an experiential model. I have colleagues throughout the country who also have incredibly good telepractice training programs that may actually use different models, their didactic models and so on. We found that experiential learning was maybe the best way to promote the learning of this particular skill set and telepractice service delivery model. So the overview of our program contains three learning components. So we have a 1 week intensive training program, which is learning component one. And it is during this time that we do intensive training of how to do telepractice. So within this intensive training, what we do is we work with our students in both instruction and in labs, where we're going back and forth, teaching them not only the platform, but also the technology that is involved in doing telepractice. I think it's very key to understanding that telepractice is only as good as the infrastructure that's available to support it. So not only do our students learn cross-platform training, but they also learn how to evaluate the infrastructure within the state of Maine in terms of broadband connectivity, strength, and so on. Our state right now is about the middle of the pack in the United States in terms of internet speed, and we all know that you've got to have adequate internet speed to be able to support a video conferencing platform. So anyway, our students are actually learning many different aspects of technology and infrastructure that support telepractice. In addition to that, of course, they're learning how to design and practice evaluations and treatment, where we're applying different applications to understand how it is that you move from a three-dimensional space into a two-dimensional plane on a computer to be able to do high-quality evaluations and treatment as well. Part of what we also have to do is train e-helpers. E-helpers are support personnel who are going to be located at our remote sites, and they have to have a certain set of skills to be able to serve as adequate and very good facilitators to promote, again, the best interaction within our sessions. Students also learn that interpersonal skills over a computer are somewhat different than what we have in person, and they have to learn to master the interpersonal skills over a computer to ensure that, again, they're providing the highest quality services to the children and adults at the remote sites. And the interpersonal skills can be anything from being perhaps a little more animated over a computer, but other things such as even understanding how you have to be front-lit when you're providing services as opposed to backlit, so that you can see exactly what you need to see at your remote sites, and also so that your clients can see you in the best way possible. We also are teaching students at this point the digital documentation operations that we have within our program. Most of what we do is all digital, but we interface with the Conley Speech, Language, and Hearing Center, which is our on-site training center, to basically provide the documentation that we need in terms of everything from billing to plans of care to daily progress reports and so on. And another really key and crucial component in the intensive training is students learn in detail all the ethical, legal, and reimbursement issues pertaining to telepractice. And there's a lot. Not only do we have federal regulations pertaining to telepractice, but we have state-by-state regulations as well. And the onus is on the practitioner to learn what their own state requires in terms of regulating telepractice. Furthermore, it's a state-by-state issue in many cases for reimbursement as well. And so, again, students need to learn about reimbursement issues as they're going forward and thinking about future sustainability of telepractice training programs should they develop their own programs as they go forward as future practitioners. So this is the very first learning component, intensive training, the first component of our program.
So this,
go ahead.
Just a question for you, Judy. So this, you know, I'm looking at this slide here and that this occurs during the first week of the semester. Can you give us a sense of approximately how many hours you're spending with your students to wrap up all of this knowledge and skill?
Well, it's 8 hours a day.
It is. Okay. All right. So it's the full week. All right. So
right.
I think.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I think that gives us a good sense of the depth, right, for those who are just stepping into this space. It really gives us a good sense of the depth of information that needs to be there as a foundation for our students.
Yes, and so we mix it up, and so there will be a piece of instruction. And then from there, we have our students break out, and they're doing labs in all of our different spaces within our telepractice lab on campus. And then they come back, and they'll do presentations. And so we kind of rotate it, so it's not just sitting and listening to instruction. It's applying what we're learning, coming back, presenting it, and so on. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. So then this sets the stage for the clinical practicum itself.
Correct. So from there, then our students engage in a semester-long clinical practicum. Understand that the model for this and the structure of a clinical practicum is a little bit different than on-site services. So for clinicians that are going into providing services on-site, oftentimes the client-to-student ratio is smaller. So you tend to have more students with fewer clients. For a telepractice program, it's a bit different. We usually take second-year students who already have a pretty good understanding of in-person service delivery model, and so subsequently they're taking those clinical skills that they've learned in person and they're applying it to the telepractice service delivery model. So the student to client ratio is different. So we may have fewer students, but each student has more clients. So our typical ratio is about 10 clients per student, and each of these clients may be at a different settings. So we mix up the settings so that students have a vast array of experiences. So we students will have clients in public school settings, both in Maine, and we have a contract with an international school in Fiji, which allows our students a huge culturally diverse experience. Students will also be working with adults in a variety of settings as well. So they may be working in with adults in their homes, in group homes, in day treatment programs, and so on. And we provide individual services, but we also run groups as well. So they get a vast array of learning experiences and also subsequently learn public school models. They learn medical models for clinical applications. So anyway, it is during this experiential learning that students do learn to apply the technology. And the referrals come through our on-site Conley Speech Language and Hearing Center, and we are part of the entire training program, which has a full-service on-site speech and hearing clinic. And during this time, students learn initially to check the infrastructure and client candidacy. We have a manual that we follow, and within that manual, you can have access forms that we use in our training program. One form we call the technology checklist. And what this is basically where we are working with the clients to learn how to access a video conference session. And we are evaluating them in terms of whether or not they're good candidates for telepractice, because not everybody is necessarily a good candidate. So we're checking things like the technology that they have within their setting in terms of equipment and internet connection. We investigate their e-helper, whether or not they'll have an e-helper that's available, and the e-helper qualifications in terms of facilitating a session. We also will assess the client's ability to navigate the screen, and we teach them things like how to use e-tools and so on. And furthermore, we're also evaluating the client characteristics in terms of behavioral, cognitive, language, physical characteristics, and so on, as to whether or not, again, they'll be able to participate in a telepractice session that's going to be of the highest quality. So that is the very first thing that we do before we even embark upon evaluation and treatment. And then, of course, students are learning how to do telepractice evaluations and different treatment applications throughout the course of the semester. We work with the students. We tell them basically that they will follow a progression in understanding how to apply the technology to provide these robust treatment sessions. Our analogy, given that we live in Maine and we partake in skiing, downhill skiing, we have beginning slopes, medium slopes, and advanced slopes, black diamonds. And we okay. tell this, I'm sorry,
I like this. I like this a lot. Thinking about just conceptualizing it that way for students so they know when they need to take an even deeper breath, right?
So we're starting on the beginning slopes when they are just getting started, and that is really and truly using the most basic treatment materials. And I mean things like just using simple PowerPoints where we're just sharing e-tools, maybe PDFs and that sort of thing, and worksheets and so on. And as it's important because this is as students are really and truly understanding how to use the technology while simultaneously providing services to different clients with different disorders. And it is sort of multitasking and requires divided attention. It's a little like learning to drive a car, where initially, you know, everything is definitely in declarative memory, where you have to go through the steps and say, well, you know, I got to turn the ignition on and so on and so forth. Eventually, over time, it moves into procedural memory where you're not really thinking about even driving the car anymore. And this is what happens with the students. They get to a point where they become so good at using the technology that it becomes procedural memory, and their entire focus then is on the client. That happens about, I would say about 6 to 7 weeks into the practicum. And it's at that point then we move them to the moderate and the advanced slopes, if you will, and where we're really infusing much more sophisticated applications of the technology to move the students up to a whole new level. So by the time that they graduate, they are absolutely master clinicians in understanding the most advanced applications of the technology in providing these high quality services for our clients. They also learn to work with e-helpers and also families and professionals. So we're attending IEP meetings. We just do them remotely. And our folks that are in our public schools that we've been working with for years, they're very used to sort of carrying us around, if you will. And we're just these faces on the screen, and they just set us on the table, and we join all we join all IEP meetings for all of our schools. and we meet with family members and so on consistently throughout all of our programs. Students are also collecting outcome measures in the same way that they would in person. And we, you know, we track all of our data through documentation in much the same way that we would do in person as well. So all along, students are developing these professional and interpersonal skills. And again, we follow the same guidelines that have been put out for knowledge and skills by ASHA. We provide, you know, we follow the same guidelines in professional and interpersonal development of our students. So here is what we. Oh, go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks so much for this. I, you know, a couple of things that really pop here. And I know we have limited time today, but thinking particularly about your thoughtful steps in infrastructure and client candidacy for these services, what a great thing to have students involved in, you know, as their training, because what I've heard from you is, and it's so true, is we need to have them thinking about this in their future and really doing this well in the future. And so I just appreciate that. And then having them think really thoughtfully about outcome measures within what they're doing through telepractice. And so just a couple of things that pop for me there. It sounds like you've got such a variety of clients you see and ways they are served. We'd love to hear more about kind of how you conceptualize that. And have you, I know you have like a model for what you do kind of at a glance.
Right. So here we are at our location in Orono. And as I said, we have a telepractice lab in Orono that has many suites, so we can provide concurrent telepractice sessions. And so here we are in our lab in Orono, and our clients receive one-on-one therapy throughout the state of Maine and also at this international school in Fiji. And one of the wonderful things that I talk about is that we can provide a therapy session, let's say, up at the Canadian border to an adult with aphasia, and literally 5 minutes later, once that session is over, we can be in Fiji. After the Fiji session's open, let's say, 5 minutes later, we can be in the southern part of the state. And so that's the beauty of telepractice, is that we don't have to leave our lab, and yet our reach is extraordinary. So we provide one-on-one therapy. We also work in communication groups. Those groups can be a few people in one physical location or multiple remote sites where we bring people together throughout the state of Maine. We provide services to children and adults across the age spectrum. And one of the most beautiful things about telepractice, in my opinion, is that caregivers, teachers, and parents can actually observe a session in real time. So we can have parents perhaps that are at work and they want to know what it is that we're doing. As long as the parents are in a secure location, they can actually join our session and watch what we're doing. And this helps tremendously with carryover. The same with family members as well. So it's a really powerful, again, powerful feature of telepractice to have anybody joining our sessions as long as they're approved and they're in secure locations, so they can observe what it is that we're doing.
That is great. And that's one of the things I'm noticing as well, you know, our ability to bring in more what I just call the friends and family, right, is really a plus. And so one of the, for those of us who are engaging with this more on the early end for us, this is a hidden benefit, right? Where, yeah, we can solicit more help of others. So yeah, thanks for that.
Right.
You know, and I'm hearing from you in this really nicely organized fashion that you have a beginning, right? You're bringing your students together for a week, you're educating them, and then there's this middle where they are engaging and working through the process, and then it's becoming more natural for them. I also know that you have this third kind of end where students are able to learn more, support each other, etc., to kind of almost like a debriefing in and of itself conceptually. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. And I do want to just make one more comment before I move to the next slide, and that is all of our students are supervised 100% of the time. And one of the most powerful things also about telesupervision is that we can chat with our students in real time. So we actually can make suggestions for students to alter the course of whatever it is that they're doing. Furthermore, students can actually chat with us to ask us questions during sessions. So that is, again, another incredibly powerful feature of telepractice that we don't necessarily see when we're doing supervision in person.
Great.
Okay, so the other learning component that we have as part of our telepractice training program is peer learning, which we feel is again so crucial for students as they are learning this service delivery model. So essentially what's happening is we meet as a group once a week for an hour and a half to 2 hours. And during this time, what we are doing is infusing different learning experiences throughout the course of the semester. So those gatherings can include everything from case presentations to discussing different types of technology. We can talk about troubleshooting. We will bring back in throughout the course of the semester discussions about rules and regulations pertaining to our different settings that we're in. And we've just found that this is an incredibly a good way for students to again learn and apply the technology as they're going through this practicum. So it really does promote active learning, and it allows the students to sort of take ownership over not only sharing what they've learned, but ownership over self-learning. And it's very, very supportive, a very supportive environment, and it does certainly lend to team building and stu as students learn from each other. And quite honestly, it's fun. We have a
I'm
really
sure it is. Yeah.
good
So
time.
these groups are very separate from planning for evaluation or treatment is what I'm seeing. And these are at almost like a higher 30,000 foot level, right? To talk more broadly, or is there also treatment planning and things going on in these sessions as well?
Now we the treatment planning actually occurs during a weekly supervisory meeting. So we as supervisors meet with each one of our students every single week to discuss treatment planning. So again, that's very similar to an on-site in-person model. Where supervisors are meeting to do treatment planning and evaluation planning and so on. This is in addition to that.
Okay, great. Yeah, thanks. I can see how and really appreciate this idea of active learning and having students work to drive that learning in these discussion groups. So you've really this has evolved over years, as you said when you began. So as we think about it, and as those who are new to this kind of are taking a moment to take that deep breath and reflect, you want to just walk us through your process of broadly again for getting this moving and really doing it well.
Sure. So, as I mentioned, we kind of started this process several years ago, and we have built the program over phases. So during the very first phase, it took about 1 to 2 years to really get a handle on what telepractice is, learn the skill set for telepractice, but also operationally. Figure out how a telepractice training program was going to fit within the department operations. And so I worked very closely with our clinic director, who was, again, really instrumental in sort of working with me to get this program off the ground. Because what we did was we phased it into our on-site clinical services. And during this time, I wrote a training manual, developed forms, which can be found on our website, figured out, again, sort of through trial and error, how to best fit the program into our current department operations. And I learned to learned how to use the technology by actually piloting the program with one student and a few clients, and we practiced the technology to perfect the technology and also to match it with our training manual and all of our forms to ensure again that it would fit well into our department. Other things that you have to think about are things like developing partnerships throughout your state, developing remote sites. We had to build remote sites. And also to figure out sustainability. I actually met with our business people on campus and read business plans to write a sustainable business plan for our program. After we finally felt like we had our footing, I actually was awarded some grants. So we had some infusion of money to help us expand our program into phase two. And it was truly during this time that we really and truly launched the program. We moved to a new space. I was able to hire people, clinical supervisor, to start expanding the students that we were training and expanding our remote sites and our partnerships, developing marketing materials, our website, and so on, and really moving the program forward. From there, then we actually moved into phase three, and I call that the expansion phase. And it was during this time, again, with another wonderful infusion of grant and a gift, that we were able to expand, taking on more students and expanding more sites. So as you can see, this has happened over the course of several years. It doesn't just happen overnight. I think it takes time, because not only are you learning about the technology, you also have to figure out operationally how a training program is going to fit into your department. And so there's a lot going on there as you're just getting started, and then really feeling like you're going to, find your footing in phase two as you move forward.
Yeah, as I'm listening to you, Judy, I really think about that phase one and thinking through that entire system. You may have your university privacy office, you may have, of course, your own department, and you have potentially your own clinic, and kind of threading all of these things together. And then you mentioned writing your business plan. There certainly is a lot for us to consider as individual programs if we wish to move to a phase two and three over time and actually take what we're doing today and grow it into what it can be. So I appreciate that. There's a lot to learn and a lot to think about. And you've given us the tip of that iceberg today, which we really appreciate as we step back and look at what we're doing. Do you have any parting thoughts for us today or things you wish, especially for a program that is just beginning now, to move into this, words of caution or thoughts that you would like to put out there for programs?
Yes, I think I do there, Mark. I want people to keep in mind best practices, and I think I kind of underscored phase one, and I want to just go back there just briefly here, because it is so incredibly important to understand the technology and how we can achieve best practices. We really have to think about, you know, HIPAA, high tech, and FERPA compliance. We have all of our ethical considerations that need to be thought through to provide the highest quality services to our clients. You know, it is our professional responsibility to do that. There are a lot of resources that have literally overnight been put out there, both on the ASHA portal, but also through the ASHA professional development as well. And one of the nicest webinars on best practices that I've seen recently has been put out by Jonine Lohman and her colleague Nathan Cornish Raleigh on preparing to offer high quality services through telepractice. I urge you, if you get a chance, to look at that webinar, because they very nicely go through everything that needs to be considered when you are building a program. So I would like to offer that up to everybody. Please go see that webinar, along with review the resources that are currently available to everyone. And understand that it takes time. It's to really and truly develop a high quality program. It takes time and a lot of trial and error to ensure you are doing what needs to be done to provide the highest quality services.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I see phase one as so critical as well, just to make sure that foundation is there. And then the other high point for me today is just listening to you talk through your very thoughtful planning in the student education aspect of this, and the foundation that goes into that as so critical. I think there's so much more we could learn there. And so I really appreciate that you've given us that, the kernel of things to think about as we move forward. We appreciate your time, and we appreciate you sharing your energies and knowledge with us. It's a great, great experience for many of us to move forward with telepractice. It's just getting it done right, and doing it as thoughtfully as we can in the midst of a lot of other chaos that's going on around us. And so we hope to bring our members more information about student education within telepractice over time. We definitely want to refer our members to the CAPSID website. You'll find the COVID-19 links as well as other webinar links for how we're supporting programs in this time. Judy, I appreciate you and your energy today. This was Judy Walker, Associate Professor and Coordinator of the University of Maine Speech Therapy Telepractice Program. Thank you so much, and we wish you a good day.
Thank you, Mark. It was my pleasure.